This is a HeadGum Original.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I think I was too much that day. I think I was too much Bobby Moynihan for them that day.
You might remember back in our fourth episode, Bobby Moynihan talked about how he got cut out of the Seth Rogen movie Neighbors. And he was pretty convinced that it was his own fault.
I think I got myself taken out of that movie. I truly believe that.
Well, as it turns out, this was not the case.
No, not at all. And it was funny because I was just literally like listening to your podcast as a fan of your podcast, and then the conversation turned to me, which was a surreal thing to happen while listening to a podcast. And I was nervous for a moment.
That, of course, is the unmistakable voice of Seth Rogen, who not only starred in Neighbors, but was one of its producers as well.
Yeah, and I heard him tell the story, and I knew definitively it wasn't true, and I actually then instantly reached out to him to let him know, and it was lovely to be able to give him the gift of letting him know that it was no fault of his own that had happened. You know,
I try not to think too much about who might be listening to this podcast. I mean, obviously it has crossed my mind that at some point Tom Hanks might hear about it, but I never really gave much thought to who else out there might be hearing it. Back when I started this, I said that part of the journey was going to be discovering other people's dead-eyes stories. I would not have predicted that we were going to be facilitating actual closure on any of them. Yet here I am, talking to Seth Rogen about the real reason that Bobby Moynihan was cut out of his movie.
The joke just didn't work, and it happens with us a lot, is like, you know, sexual jokes often don't work when things are too sexual. It's funny because I was listening to the Isn't It Romantic one, and it's a similar thing, I think, where like the joke just wasn't that funny because it was overly sexual in a moment when the audience did not want that. And often like horniness and humor like do not mix that well, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny that he would think that even if the joke was funny, that we would have been annoyed with him and that would have been a reason to cut it. like we would have been in a test screening and been like, man, this joke killed, but Bobby was annoying that day, so let's not put it in the movie. Like, yeah, it was, it's interesting to see how people can kind of, it was so fascinating.
Bobby had formed an idea in his mind about what had happened. But Seth knew the truth. So he reached out and patched things up, cleared up this small confusion, and everybody felt better about it. Case closed. And that's where I figured the Seth Rogen conversation would have ended. Because what else did we have to talk about, right? It's not like I got cut out of the movie Neighbors. My only link to that film was that I bought a ticket to see it in the theater. Could there be some unexpected connection between Seth and I, just waiting to be discovered? Well, still 25 minutes left in the episode, so the answer is probably yeah.
This is Dead Eyes, a podcast about one actor's quest to find out why Tom Hanks fired him from a small role in the 2001 HBO miniseries Band of Brothers.
I'm Connor Ratliff. I'm an actor and comedian. 20 years ago, I was fired by Tom Hanks. I was told the reason was that he saw my audition tape and he thought I had dead eyes. And that's the short version.
Like, how much did it fuck with you? Like, it seemed to really change the course of your life in some way that maybe you didn't even start to realize how drastically until you started doing the podcast.
Okay, I'm going to lead with something that might be pretty unrelatable. It's a very strange thing when a famous person follows you on social media. It's even stranger when you get a message from them, because your first impulse is to check and make sure you aren't being pranked by a parody account or a bot. I got a direct message from Seth Rogen on Twitter telling me about how he had cleared things up with Bobby, saying nice things generally about this podcast. And my first thought was that it would be great to talk to Seth for this because I knew that even though he's a hugely successful person, he has had some firsthand experience with show business disappointment. After all, his breakout role was on the TV show Freaks and Geeks, which was both a perfect television show and a notorious failure, canceled by NBC after only one season, less than one season, really. Judd Apatow and Paul Feig were so certain that the show they had created wasn't going to survive that they produced a series finale ahead of time, just so they would have it ready when they finally got the axe. I love that show so much. It still makes me sad that it never got to continue. And it turns out that even within the happy experience of working on that show, Seth was already learning hard lessons about how you can't take these kind of things too personally. You know, when something happens to you, it feels deeply personal.
Really personal.
Even though you're one of, you know, thousands of variables that are in motion.
No, 100%. I learned that lesson very early on in that I was on the show Freaks and Geeks, and I was one of the only actors on the show who wasn't in every episode. And I remember the first time a script came and I wasn't in it. And I was the it was the first time any of the main cast was not in one of the episodes. And it was the third or fourth episode. I really thought it was something I was doing and it was my fault. And I look back and I literally think Judd was probably, and Paul were like 100% unaware of it. And they were just like, couldn't think of any like good storyline for that character that week. So they just didn't have me in there. You know what I mean? Like it was a very like, you know, like I was 16 or 17 years old and I was like, thought I had messed up and was being removed from the show, you know, but now I realize that, like, oh no, people are just not even thinking of that shit. You know what I mean?
It's also funny that it seemingly that impulse almost never goes away. Kind of that Bobby felt that while, you know, he was already at a point in his career where you would assume those kinds of insecurities have sort of worked themselves out.
Well, now I'm at the point where if I do something and it's not included, I'm like, thank God it must have been bad, you know? Like, I am much happier to not see a bad thing I've done than, like, and I will sometimes think, like, oh, it must not have been funny, but I also don't...
Yeah, you feel the relief.
Yeah, I feel more relief, and my head also doesn't go to, like, it's not funny because I ruined it. I'm like, it's not funny, maybe I ruined it, but maybe 100 other things might have happened, you know? Who knows?
You do reach a point where it actually feels like, oh, they're protecting me. Maybe that wasn't going to be good for me.
Yeah, I would much rather not be in something than have like a big swing and a miss, you know? But now we are more, we do specifically try to reach out to actors and tell them they've been cut out of things and tell them why before the movie is seen, so they aren't expecting to see themselves and they know why they are not seeing themselves. And that only comes from learning the hard way and literally having actors show up at the premieres to some of our early movies and me and Evan looking at each other and being like, oh shit, like, we didn't tell this person they're not in the movie anymore. Like, they're about to have a very bad evening, you know?
Seth has such a wide range of experiences. I mean, he's a writer, a producer, a director, an actor. And he's really able to talk about this kind of thing from a lot of different angles. There was one experience in particular that took me by surprise. Made me realize that he and I have something special in common. Which is that Seth Rogen auditioned for Band of Brothers. And guess what? It did not go well for him.
I did audition for Band of Brothers. I remember it very vividly. And, well, I was actually just texting with a good friend of mine, David Krumholtz, who is also an actor, who I vaguely remembered. He had also auditioned for Band of Brothers, and he got a few callbacks and actually auditioned for Steven Spielberg. And Tom Hanks was not there, but Steven Spielberg was at one of his auditions. And I knew that before. So I was like, if this goes well, I get to meet Steven Spielberg. And I never, like, I always felt so stupid getting dressed up for the auditions. Like, I always was like, if like, the difference between them casting me or not is, like, them being able to imagine what I look like in camouflage, then I'm probably not going to get this role. Which was stupid, I think, arguably, because it probably would help. But, so yeah, I remember, and this happened a lot to me, where, like, I showed up to the audition wearing, like a Stussy t-shirt and, like, you know, like, soccer shorts, and every other person was in, like, head-to-toe, like, you know, full on like army fatigues. And like, it's one of the many times I was like, oh, I don't think I'm going to get this. these guys seem to want it more. And I didn't get it. And I remember being bummed out, because also I loved it. I was obsessed with it when it came out. I watched it religiously. It was hard because the way it was written was like all overlapping dialogue. And like, there's 30 people talking at a time. And like, the way it was is like the line would be like hyphen, like, what do you mean, Cap? Hyphen, you've been interrupted by someone else. And like, it was, yeah, it was like nonsense. And that's the other thing with auditions, is like, they're in no way analogous to the shooting of the actual scene in any way, shape, or form. Like, it's the only thing where, like, in no way are you doing something that is even how the job is going to be done in the end. You know what I mean? Like, you don't do it once. Like, you should have seen for 6 hours. Like, it's like, what actor does it perfectly once? You know what I mean? Like, it makes no sense whatsoever. You're not standing in the place. You're not reading with another actor. The expression is acting is reacting. Like, once you take away another actor, you've really damaged that equation, I would say. Like, the whole process is silly, which is like, again, why it like is just so painful, because like, it's like, not only is it uncomfortable, it's not analogous to anything.
Seth and I share what I'm going to go ahead and call an unbreakable bond. We are both actors who tried and failed to be in Band of Brothers. And we're not the only ones. Zach Braff recently tweeted about how he auditioned for the role that ultimately went to David Schwimmer. So, as impressive as the final cast of Band of Brothers turned out to be, Damian Lewis, Ron Livingston, Michael Fassbender, Tom Hardy, the list of people who didn't make the cut is also starting to stack up pretty nicely. Braff tweeted that he has been pouting about his rejection from Band of Brothers for decades, still hasn't watched the show. I guess we all process not being in Band of Brothers in different ways.
Yeah, I remember watching it being like, I don't know if I would have been happy crawling around the fucking mud in London for a year and a half to have said like 10 words throughout the course of this thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's the other thing is like, I've auditioned for so many movies in like the 20 years I've lived in Los Angeles, and there is maybe one that I look back on and I'm like, oh, I actually wish I was in that movie. And every single other one, they might have turned out well, but I don't look at like the role that I was specifically going to be for, and I think of myself in it, and I'm always like, eh, like, would that have done, like, would I be so happy if I was that guy? Like, would that have made a big difference? I'm like, the answer is no, like, almost all the time, you know?
Because if the thing is good, then you kind of adapt to, like, well, I wasn't meant to be in it because it turned out well. And if it's bad, you're relieved that you didn't get it.
Yeah, like, I remember I auditioned for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and then for the role Elijah Wood got. And that was, like, maybe the only time I thought, like, I actually wish I was in that movie. You know, but I don't wish I was in Band of Brothers. Like, I like Band of Brothers. It's fucking cool. But like, it seems like it was a nightmare to shoot. You know.
Have you ever interacted with Tom Hanks in any way?
I actually think I've only met him once, very briefly, like at the Golden Globes. Yeah, I've always heard he's very nice.
Yeah, same here. Same here.
I gotta say, like, I mean, I will not pretend to have as long and storied a career as Tom Hanks by any stretch of the imagination, but I feel like if I was directing something and I went through the process that you were describing, I would probably have some memory of it, you know? It's different. I would imagine he remembers this shit.
Well, we'll find out, hopefully.
We'll find out.
Dead Eyes will be right back.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So I've been trying to track down my Band of Brothers audition tape with no luck yet. But it's a bizarre thing to be hunting for because there's no real protocol for actors to get a hold of these things. But once the roles in a project are cast, it's not like anybody is ever supposed to see those auditions again. But I realized that in Seth Rogen's case, a couple of his early auditions are actually out there in the world for people to see. His Freaks and Geeks audition was released as part of the bonus features on the deluxe DVD set. And even one of his unsuccessful auditions eventually made its way into public view.
A few years ago, I think when The Office was ending, they released the audition tapes of actors who had auditioned for The Office, and mine was one of them. And I auditioned for Dwight Schrute. And it might actually be one of the only times, other than Freaks and Geeks, that I have seen one of my own audition tapes. And it's horrible.
Urine is sterile. Did you know that? If you're in the field, you can clean a man's wound by taking a whiz on it. That is actually in first aid books written by the Red Cross.
I don't think I ever got anything from auditioning, ever. I maybe got one role ever from auditioning, like Freaks and Geeks, maybe the part in Donnie Darko. But every other thing I ever did, I actually either like wrote it myself or knew the person who wrote it, or like, auditioning sucks. It's like so brutal. And as a director, I hate it. Like, I can't stand being in the room for auditions. I feel too much of what is happening, and it, like, I find it exhausting. And my partner, Evan, and it's great because he was never an actor, and he just, like, he's numb to it. Like, to him, it's like, it's no different than talking to, like, the, you know, like watching daily, you know, any other part of the process. But for me, it's like, it's exhausting. I remember he used to be like, after the people read, he'd be like, see you soon. And I'd be like, you can't say that to them.
It's very dangerous to give hope to an actor.
Yeah.
It's like a dog with a bone. Like, if you even hint to an actor like that things are going well in an audition process.
No, I remember that. I remember they'd say something like, see you around. And I'd be like, they said, see you around. Why would they have said that otherwise? It means they must have loved it. You know, like, that means they'll see me.
I'll never forget the first moment that I saw Seth Rogen for Anchorman. I was looking for a young, up-and-coming actor. I needed someone with that crackle, that sizzle. And this curly-headed young man with a laugh and a twinkle in his... No, I'm kidding.
That's Adam McKay, the Academy Award-winning writer-director of The Big Short, Vice, Talladega Nights, Step Brothers. And back in 2004, he cast Seth Rogen in a very small role in the movie Anchorman. The character is listed on IMDb as Eager Cameraman. And if you don't remember him being in that movie, you're not alone. There's currently a 6-second clip on YouTube, and the clip is titled, Seth Rogen was in Anchorman?
I'm getting some great stuff in this corner.
Shut up.
In total, he has less than a minute of screen time. And it wasn't like this was a celebrity cameo. Bear in mind, this was years before Knocked Up, before The 40-Year-Old Virgin. And he only really got the role as a favor to producer Judd Apatow.
Judd had done Freaks and Geeks with Seth and came to me and was like, hey, do you mind if we give this guy a line? He's really funny. I think he's really talented. And that was it. We put him in. And he had like the tiniest moment, but he did that really funny countdown with the pinky move. So even in that tiny little moment, he made it work. But yeah, that was it. It was Judd. Judd was like, please cast this guy. And I was like, okay. And he was great.
When I saw Anchorman in the theater, It was after Seth had been a series regular on two different network TV shows, both canceled. At the time, I was concerned that his career might be over, just like mine was. I was worried for him.
Me too.
You have actors that are like, especially character actors that you're like rooting for, and then you'll see them show up in a small role and you'll think, oh no, like, is that all they could get?
Yes. The answer was yes. It's so funny to think of now, but it really like more speaks to like how much time has actually passed in that time. But like, as crazy as it seems, like me and Jason Segel and people like that, like were viewed as unheard. It was unheard of to think that people like us would be starring in mainstream movies, you know?
Did you ever think about giving up, or was there a period where you were like, I don't want to do this anymore?
I was very accepting of the fact that I might not obtain like a mainstream level of success. But the truth is, like, the thing that me and Evan that got us into movies in the first place were like Kevin Smith movies and like watching like Bottle Rocket and shit like that, you know? And we were writers. And so we were like, worst comes to worst, like with Superbad was the script we had. We were like, we could make this if we had to. Like, it takes place in like backyards and alleyways and hallways of schools, you know? Like, it's not impossible for us to just make this. And that was always something that like we had in our head, was like, if all else fails, like we can just do this ourselves, I think. But no, I never had any other skill set. I've been doing this since I was 12 years old, and I've literally never had any other type of job in my entire life. So like, I didn't graduate high school. Like, I have no other options.
have you ever been fired from any job?
Yes. Me and Evan were fired as writers from the movie Blades of Glory. We were rewriting it, and some of the biggest jokes in that movie were written in the draft that they then fired us from.
How did that feel?
It was a real bummer, honestly. Yeah, it sucked, and I had a lot of resentment towards the guy who fired me for a long time. And I remember, actually, I saw him once in like a general meeting at a restaurant with someone else who I didn't know, and I went up to the table and was like, don't trust this man, he fired me for very bad reasons, and then used all the material I wrote afterwards.
Have you ever had to fire somebody? Because I imagine you might be more likely to be in that position than the other for most of your career.
We have done that thing where after a table read, someone is replaced. That has happened. We've done that. And like, ultimately, there is some sense that you're trying to instill that is like, this is for the best. Like a dysfunctional version of this is not good for anybody, you know? Like, and I do also think like, being an actor is just so hard, and like something that I like as an actor, I view myself as like a specifically shaped tool, you know what I mean? Like, and it's as impersonal as that sometimes, where it's like, you know, a screwdriver is a great tool, but you just don't need it for everything, you know? And I think that's how actors are. It's like you're trying to build this thing, and sometimes someone is great, they're just not the specific thing you need, you know? I think the more you understand about filmmaking as a whole, the easier that is probably to accept. But I think if like when you're an actor and you just are very self-preservational, and especially when you're first starting out, it's like impossible to not just 100% take it personally, you know?
Have you ever heard the term dead eyes professionally?
Yeah, I've been in rooms with casting directors where if you were to ask an actor, like, what is the absolute worst case scenario for what is being said behind my back after I leave the room? Mm-hmm. I have seen that happen. Like, on many occasions where I've literally been sitting there thinking, like, that person would maybe actually kill themselves if they heard what was being said about them at this moment. And I try not to participate in it, but very much. But other people just, again, it's as critical as you would be if you were trying to use a hammer to do what a screwdriver was supposed to do. Like, that is just like, well, that didn't fucking work at all. You know, it's funny. I have a story that's actually kind of similar. So there's this movie called How Do You Know that James L. Brooks directed.
James L. Brooks is, of course, the Academy Award-winning writer-director of films like Terms of Endearment and Broadcast News. If you're unfamiliar with his body of work, you may have seen his name at the beginning and end of every episode of The Simpsons. He's one of the executive producers, and in many ways, the main reason it became a TV show in the first place. The movie Seth is talking about is Brooks' most recent feature film, How Do You Know?, which came out back in 2010.
Well, he considered me being the lead in that movie, and as someone who grew up, you know, a huge fan of his, it was a huge honor. And I went out to dinner at his house, and he invited me over, and we talked about the movie for hours. He really seemed to think I was perfect for it, and we set up an audition where I went in, and Reese Witherspoon was the other lead of the movie, and it was literally me and her in his office as he filmed it for maybe 4 or 5 hours. We read through the scenes of the movie. He would give us direction. We would do coverage. He would do shots. It was intense, you know, and it was also a dream come true. Like, I grew up idolizing Jim Brooks, and a few weeks go by, and I haven't heard anything, and I get a phone call, and it's him, and I'm like, hey, Jim, what's up? And he goes, oh, not even close, pal.
Oh, no.
And I was like, what? And he's like, I've just been watching it over and over the last few weeks. Like, not even close. Not at all. You're not at all right for this role. And I was like, oh, no. And he's like, I just think you're too young. And he wasn't putting it on me at all. He was just like, I just think, like, I conceived of it wrong. And he's like, I think the character needs to be much older. And he ultimately cast Paul Rudd, who is, you know, 10 years older than I am. And, like, it made sense what he was saying, but I will never forget. He literally opened the conversation by going, "Not even close, pal."
Not even close, pal. I mean, like, if that had happened to me, that would be the name of this podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Not even close, pal.
Not even close, pal. I say it all the time. It's still like it is a phrase. I mean, this happened over 10 years ago. Like, it is a phrase I constantly am bringing up in my personal life.
I'll tell you what, it's devastating, but there's also something kind of wonderful about it.
Well, there is, and I thought about it, because if it was close, it would be so much more painful. Like, if that phone call was like, I thought, like, it almost seems like it works, it's very close,
yeah.
You seem like you're the right age, and you seem like you have the right look, there's just something there. The deadness in my, you know, perhaps the deadness in my eyes. But yeah, I mean, like, that's what's more brutal about your thing, is it seems like it was close, except for this one specific thing. Whereas,
well,
my thing, not even that I would have, you know, not even that's a movie I would have been completely thrilled to be in the end anyway.
Right.
But it wasn't even close. It wasn't any one thing. It was 100 things. It was 1,000,000 things, you know. It was nothing I could focus on.
I'd also say that, you know, my thing was, no matter what, it was so minor, it was so small, it just meant a lot to me at the time.
Dead Eyes is concerning, though. I would be like, I would be concerned that was a holistic problem that may, like, affect my overall longevity, yeah.
I mean, the most success I'm having so far is in a medium where you can't see my eyes.
Exactly.
You know, so.
You got great eyes for podcasts.
Yeah. Not even close, pal. I keep thinking about that phrase, what it must have felt like to hear that directly from James L. Brooks. I think part of why it's so funny is that it's shockingly blunt. He's not being mean, he's just being clear. He's honest, but still friendly, with a kind of implied knowing wink. Like, this didn't work out, but we're still good, right? Of course, Brooks was in the relative calm of pre-production for that film, delivering the bad news to a movie star whose talent he clearly admired enough to consider him for a leading role. Everything about that context and the amount of time he'd put into making the decision eases the sting of the actual rejection. He Thinks You Have Dead Eyes is also blunt, but Tom Hanks was recasting a day player in the thick of production on what was, at the time, the most expensive TV miniseries in history. There's a good chance that phrase was not something that was ever intended for my ears. When Bobby was talking to me about getting cut from the movie Neighbors, I doubt he thought even for a moment that Seth was ever going to hear what he was saying. As I was telling you up top, I try not to think too hard about who might be listening to this podcast. But in this case, luckily, the right person was. And he reached out. And in a funny way, I think we actually made a weird, awkward, very minor incident from the past all better somehow. Which gives me hope that the same thing can happen for me. Which brings me to a new development. As it happens, Seth Rogen wasn't the only person listening to this podcast who decided to reach out and make contact. My manager, Aaron Sandler, recently received an email out of nowhere from a person I did not expect to hear from. Hi, Aaron. I've been very much enjoying Connor Ratliff's podcast, Dead Eyes.
Please let him know that if he ever wants to chat, I'd be happy to talk to him. Or if you'd like to book me for the podcast and then fire me the next day, I'm okay with that too. Best, Ron Livingston.
Ron Livingston, who played the role of Captain Lewis Nixon on Band of Brothers, one of the three actors in Episode 5 who shared a scene with Private Zelensky. In the next episode of Dead Eyes, I finally get a chance to talk to Ron and also to Scottish actor Stephen McColl, who played the role of First Lieutenant Moose Haliger. Two more very big pieces of the puzzle click into place as I learn about Ron and Stephen's memories of shooting their big scene with Private Zelensky. Dead Eyes is a production of HeadGum Studios. It was created by me, Connor Ratliff. It's written by me, and it's mostly me that you hear talking, including now. The show is produced and edited by Harry Nelson and Mike Comite. Special thanks to my guests, Seth Rogen and Adam McKay. If you like Dead Eyes, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us on Twitter, at Dead Eyes Podcast, and talk about us nicely on social media. If you want to reach out, our email address is deadeyespodcast@gmail.com. Please tell your friends about this podcast, especially if you're friends with Tom Hanks, who has, as far as I can tell, two James L. Brooks-related credits on his resume. The first is an early one from 1982, an episode in the fourth season of the TV series Taxi. He plays a college-age stoner named Gordon. You can find his scenes on YouTube. The second is a cameo as himself decades later in The Simpsons Movie. Both very fun appearances, but all too brief. I want to live in a world where James L. Brooks writes and directs an entire feature film starring Tom Hanks. Or even a short one. Anything. A standalone monologue that he can recite over Zoom. I just want to see Tom Hanks act out something that James L. Brooks writes. Now that I've imagined them working together, I can't unimagine it. I really hope it happens. You can tell them I said that. Thanks for listening. Stay safe.
That was a HeadGum Original.